Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast here on Seminole Sports Radio from the Sporto. I'm your host, Doc Staples. Once again, you can listen to this podcast through the Seminole Sports Radio app, through vSporto, and on your mobile devices, available through iTunes or the Android Marketplace. And you can also subscribe to us through your podcast manager of choice. And if you're enjoying this podcast, I remind you, please rate this podcast. Those five-star reviews help us a bunch on iTunes. And also, you know, tell your friends, spread a little bit of good cheer on social media. We are, of course, available at Doc Staples at Twitter and the Unconquered Podcast on Facebook. So let's go ahead and get two things. First and foremost, going back to just a little bit more of the fallout over the course of the week after the Louisville game, and talking about some of the things that that have worked their way back to us and from practices, and getting a sense of where Florida State stands as a program after that embarrassment at Louisville. So you know, reached out and got to talk to some folks in the program and was curious about what they thought about where things are. I know one of the things that I'd called out in the last podcast is that I felt like Florida State has been soft of late. And that's one thing that actually one of my best sources in the program actually really disagreed with my take there and set me straight on a couple things. And I'll paraphrase here, but basically this source put it something along the lines of FSU isn't soft. Florida State's not soft as a program. They just play soft. And I know that sounds like the same thing, but it is a little bit different. And this source actually basically said the reason that they look like they're playing soft is that they're uncertain. That, you know, when you have guys, and this was something else that you know, we covered on the last podcast, when you have guys that are not certain of their assignments or really don't have a full grasp of what they're being asked to do at the moment, and when they're thinking out there, then they're not going to play fast and aggressive. When you are thinking on the field of play, you can't play fast and aggressive. And I think that's actually a really good point, that this is an aggressive team. This is an aggressive group of athletes. This is a group of players that's not soft. And that backs up what I had heard in the offseason about how hard this team had worked in the offseason. And if you look at them on the hoof, they look really good, although maybe not as big on the interior as you'd like. I mean, some of the defensive tackles are, you don't have the 330-pound sort of bell cows that you've got. You know, if you watch the Clemson game against Georgia Tech, the reason that they were able to clog up things against Georgia Tech is because they've just got so much beef inside. As good as Derek Nnadi is, as good as DeMarcus Christmas are, they're not that. They're not, you know, those wide bodies. They lack a little bit of that on defense at this point. But aside from that, I mean, they look really, really good on the hoof. This is a team that has clearly worked hard physically. And I think, you know, that's a good point from my source there to set me straight on that, to say, no, they're not soft. They work. And they, you know, there's some mental toughness there. But they're uncertain. And they're thinking. And they're not playing fast and aggressive because there's so much overhead that they're trying to work through. And that gets back to something that, you know, we talked about on the last podcast, and that is the Thoreau thing needs to come back, you know, simplify. The reason that this is something else that talking to a source within the program, one source said that the reason that things consistently look so new, like look as though Florida State gets caught by surprise by different things, or, you know, they have to make adjustments to various things on the sideline and at different times, is because Florida State's running so much that they can't possibly rep everything in practice. I mean, ideally, like, let's say you're running an offense. ideally you want to be able to line up and say, okay, well, we're going to, when we line up this way, we're going to run these, you know, this series of plays. When we line up this way, they're going to line up this way, or this way. Here are the four basic options, you know, that they're going to do 90% of the time when they line up against this personnel grouping and against this formation or whatever. And here are the, you know, few things that they do. And you try to, you know, you want to get, you know, three reps, say, against every possible look or combination that they, that they're going to bring there, so that you've got, you know, you want to get that each day, three reps each day against, you know, with what you're going to do against what they're going to do, ideally. Well, when you run so much stuff that you can't actually get through everything that you run, let alone everything that you run versus all the various things that they run, that's when it gets difficult, because it is actually in many cases the first time that these guys have seen this stuff, because they haven't been able to rep it in practice all the time. And I think, you know, this is where it gets tricky, because, you know, on the one hand you could say, well, you know, that's just ego trying to call plays, falling in love with the playbook or whatever. I think that there's more to it than that. And in talking around to different people in the program, I think some of this has to do with sort of a paranoia or an over concern with contingencies that has developed in the program, partly because everybody pulls out the kitchen sink to face FSU. So when they're looking at stuff to, you know, to be sure, you know, what do we think that Bobby Petrino is going to pull out against us? You can't just look at the first three games of the year. You can't just look at what Bobby Petrino's done at Louisville, because he's going to go back and dip deep into the well because he's playing against Florida State. And that happens for everybody. You have to go back and you're looking at, you know, not just what's going on, you know, with USF and with what their coordinators have done the last 2 years. You're also looking at what, you know, this position coach did at Iowa 2 years ago. Because, you know, that may come back to be used in this game. And at some point, you know, at some point there's a benefit to that where you're prepared for anything that they can throw at you. But at another level, it's over preparation, and, you know, you get to paralysis by analysis, and you get to the place where you're actually better off just saying, you know what, there's going to be times where they're going to bring stuff that we haven't seen and that we can't rep in practice, that we can't prepare our guys for, and we're just going to have them prepared on the basic principles of what we do, and that's that. And the coaching staff knows this, but at the same point, it's really hard to at times as a coaching staff to basically concede that, to say, you know what? Well, they're gonna know what we're gonna do, because we're the top of the hill, we're their Super Bowl. They're gonna know what we're gonna do, and they're gonna scheme against that. They're gonna find all these various things that they're gonna be able to scheme against it. But we just have to basically train our guys to be able to work on the fly, to diagnose that and do the best they can, and then we'll address it on the sideline, as opposed to trying to provide an answer to all of that, all of the various possibilities, and then still sometimes having, you know, those various possibilities not be used, or new possibilities that you couldn't get to ending up showing up as well. So it's sort of a catch-22. For top programs, that you have to prepare for all the extra stuff, but you can't prepare for all the extra stuff. That's the catch-22. And that's where, you know, Florida State defensively and offensively right now just needs to continue to simplify. And this is where self-scouting helps. And this is something that Fisher's offense and defense have always done well, is self-scouting. And this is something, you know, they have to go back and reevaluate what's our identity. I mean, when Jimbo Fisher showed up at Florida State and the cupboard was basically bare talent-wise on the offensive side of the ball, and really on the defensive side as well, but, you know, he was only coaching the offensive side of the ball. When he showed up at Florida State, he made the declaration and the determination, we're going to be able to run the outside zone play, period. That's going to be, and they repped the heck out of that play. And they ran the outside zone play with a lot of success. And really, that's been the thing that Fisher has wanted to hang his hat on. As, you know, if you want to talk about what Fisher's sort of bread and butter has been at Florida State, it's the outside zone play in Houston, outside zone play in the running game, in Houston in the passing game. That's basically been the bread and butter in those two phases. But it seems to me that as Fisher has gotten more toys, more tools, better talent, it's become more difficult to stick with the, you know, we're gonna limit more, and some of these guys aren't gonna be able to touch the ball as much because we can't overload. That's the hard part. You get 15 guys who really should have the ball in their hands because they're all outstanding players, and you try to make sure that you're putting everybody in the best possible place. Well, sometimes it's just better to focus on the outside zone. Sometimes it's just better to say, you know what, we're gonna do Houston. And really, I mean, that's the thing, is offensively, the place where the complexity is really difficult in Jimbo's offense. And, you know, I've talked about this ad nauseum on this podcast, and, you know, there are others who've talked about this, I think, in many cases, very ignorantly of how Jimbo Fisher's offense works. The passing concepts aren't that difficult. The passing game doesn't really need much fixing at this point. There's not a whole lot of alteration that needs to be done. The concepts in Fisher's passing game are not overly complex, nor are they overly diverse. I mean, you know, in that regard, I mean, it's a pretty standard offense. Wide receivers have to be on the right spots. You got to learn how to read the defense a little bit, but that's normal for any college offense. I mean, that's true in the Bobby Petrino offense. That's true in, you know, the old Steve Spurrier offense. Heck, that was true back in the Mark Richt and even the Jeff Bowden offense. You had, as a wide receiver, you had to learn to read the defense off your, by the time you'd taken your second step off your release, you had to know what it was so that you could adjust this route to this yardage or whatever based on, you know, whether they were in single safety or two safety stuff. And that's really the sort of thing you have. Every offense in college football basically does that. And if you don't do that, then you're going to have a zillion pass plays, different plays, to try to compensate for the adjustments that need to be made in order to run an offense successfully in college football. I mean, that's an exchange I had recently. Well, I guess not that recently, but something I chatted about on Twitter with Chris Brown of Smart Football, talking about how, you know, a lot of you got a choice in college offenses that you can either run a zillion plays or you can have various checks and adjustments built into the routes for the wide receivers. I mean, those are your choices. And Fisher goes more or less with the latter one, where it's, you know, more limited concepts, but basically making sure that the receivers and all that, they learn how to run those concepts well. And that's why, you know, in any program, it generally takes 2-3 years for a wide receiver to contribute on the field. Florida State's had more success with young wide receivers and particularly freshman wide receivers, 4- and 5-star wide receivers coming in and being able to contribute right away. Fisher's offense at Florida State has had more success with that than just about anybody. But myopic Florida State fans and some media don't see that. The one thing that they could do in the passing game is use the back shoulder more, particularly in the middle of the field. They could use a little bit more of a vertical passing game and going one-on-one and just letting those guys win sometimes, you know, in the back shoulder, sort of like what Clemson does with Mike Williams. Sometimes you just need to do that and you need to take advantage of that. And they could do that more. Other than that, I mean, there's not a whole lot to do in the passing game. But the big issue, and you know, again, talking to various people in the Florida State program, the big problem that they've got right now is they're running so many run plays. They need to run less diversity. They need to have less diversity, a less diverse rushing offense, and just do the few things that they do well. So narrow the run plays to, you know, outside zone, inside zone, power O and counter tray or something like that, you know, and then maybe one option look, you know, find your 5 or 6, even 7 or 8 pass run plays that you're going to run from, you know, whatever formations you're going to put in for that week, and limit the number of different formations as long as they're not, you limit the formation so that you're not going to have too many alterations in the blocking scheme as a result. Limit to those things that you can rep over and over and over again so that your guys are confident blocking them and they can make those blocks against the fronts that they're going to see. Don't try to do quite as much in the running game because, I mean, there's a lot of complexity on the offensive line. And when you hear pro scouts and when you hear quarterbacks, you know, going to the NFL talking about the complexity of Jimbo Fisher's offense, some of that is Fisher teaches coverage reads rather than progression reads for a lot of things. So, you know, that's a little harder to learn up at the front end. But that gets easy, you know, as quarterbacks grow, or much easier. But the biggest thing in terms of the complexity of the offense is the protections and the number of different things that are going on in the run game in terms of the stuff that's going on up front. And if the quarterback's in charge of that, and, you know, the older the quarterback gets, the more he's in charge of. When the quarterback's in charge of that, that's a lot. And when the quarterback's not in charge of it as much, it's still a lot for the offensive line, for the center, whoever's dealing with that. And the offensive line has to be able to communicate. And let's say, you know, one of the issues, let's say, to put some flesh on it, one of the things that can happen is, let's say you've got a given protection that's called out of, you know, base, out of ponies, where you got two backs in the backfield. And you have 21 personnel. You got a tight end in there and all that. Well, the protection may be the same call, but then, and you have a Charlie blitz, and you got a running back in the backfield to go out and pick up the Charlie blitz, the corner blitz from the short side, say. But then all of a sudden you run into a different formation. Let's say now you're in what we used to call rifle. So you're four wide receiver, one back, 10 personnel. And then they Charlie on that. Well, now the offensive tackle might be responsible for it, because it may be the same protection call, but now you have to slide it differently, and there has to be communication up front, and it's easy to get a missed assignment here or there. That's where the protections, you know, you try to find ways to get protections so that you never turn a guy loose. Well, the problem is, if you've got so many protections to try to avoid that, then guys end up getting turned loose just because offensive linemen who are on different protections at a different point, or their communication is not very good, or they're just not used to being in this protection against that look. That's where it gets tricky. And then the same thing with run checks and the number of different options in the running game in terms of how this can be blocked or what run play is being run. There's a lot more variation there than in a lot of offenses. I mean, some offenses really have two or three plays that they run in the running game, and that's it. I think that's a little bit extreme. I mean, years ago, Michigan basically had two run plays, inside zone and outside zone, and they didn't really run anything else. I think that's extreme. I don't think you need to go there. But I do think that, you know, there's a certain point where you have, you know, 14 formations out of which you run, you know, 17 different run calls. You need to pare that down. You need to have that down to, you know, your five or six run calls that you're going to run this week. And you need to be able to run that against the various looks that they're going to do. And that's where I think a lot of things can improve. And that's part of why I think you see some of the struggles up front right now. The offensive line and, you know, just in general protection and the running game, they need to just streamline a little bit in that area of the offense. And that's where they can get a lot better. And defensively, you know, I've been told that this week they did do a good bit of simplifying. They recognized the obvious in this game, that, you know, they could afford to get a lot simpler, and that guys were not grasping what they thought they were grasping. So they did, you know, that's something I was told, they did spend some time simplifying. But the question is exactly how much, and that much I still don't know. And I was told, you know, around midweek, things still didn't look massively different on the defensive side of the ball. There were still busts happening, even in practice. And, you know, that stuff, that can't happen. And USF will beat this team if you have busts like that. Flowers isn't going to fit it into spaces, but he also probably isn't going to overthrow guys that are wide open by 15 yards like Lamar Jackson did. And that's one of the more frustrating things about that Louisville game, if you're a Florida State fan, is, you know, as you're watching that, and also coaches, is, you know, if Lamar Jackson had even had a good game, they really could have beaten Florida State badly. Jackson didn't even play that well. They made him look great, even though he didn't play that great. So, you know, they're going to have to continue to figure out whatever they need to do to get through to get players to understand what they need to do. But I was told that they simplified, but exactly how much and how much of a difference that's going to make is unclear. And of course, they're still not going to have Derwin James. And, you know, the news came in today that Josh Sweat is also going to be out for a couple weeks. He had a minor knee surgery where they had to deal with a little bit of a very minor meniscus tear. They just clipped off there. And you know, if you just get the cartilage clipped off like that, then, you know, it's only going to take a couple weeks for him to get back. But that's still, you know, they're going to have to account for their absence against another up-tempo spread option attack and against a really good team. I mean, USF is a good team. They probably, you know, I think this USF team probably should be ranked. I mean, they're 10-4 since they last played FSU. Keep that in mind. And Wanky Flowers is a terrific runner. I mean, the kid's a 4.4 type guy, and he's not miles away from Lamar Jackson and the sort of stuff that he can do in the option attack. You know, he's not Lamar Jackson, but he's a really, really good player, and they've got actually as good or better as a running back in the backfield. You know, one of the formula, and you know, I helped develop a power rankings formula a while back, and that power rankings formula actually has USF ranked ahead of Houston. So I mean, if you think about that, this is a quality team. You know, they've got talent, and they've played well, and then furthermore, this is their Super Bowl. So, you know, the defense, you know, the defense needs to come out and play, and they need to come out and be locked in on their assignments and make sure that they know what they're doing. Because this is going to be a bunch of Florida kids at South Florida, kids that were not recruited by the big three schools in Florida, and that are going to want to prove that they belonged at those places. They're going to want to prove that they should be at Florida State, or that they're better than the guys that wound up at Florida State. At the end of the day, I mean, I think this is going to be a really interesting game because of that. Now, you know, I'm really curious to see how much simpler things are going to get. I mean, if you look, you know, going back, I guess backtracking just a little bit here, think about Florida State in the second half in recent years. What has kept happening is they come out and, you know, they step on themselves over and over and over again in the first half. And then all of a sudden they sort of hone in on the few things that they feel really comfortable executing against what that team can do at halftime. And then they come out and they obliterate teams generally. What I want to see, you know, just coming in from the Florida State side, what I would want to see, and what I do want to see, is them come into this game with basically the halftime plan. What are the 15 things, the 10 things that we know we can execute, and let's just do those. And, you know, they're gonna get a play here or there, that's fine. But what are the things that we know we can execute right up front, simplify to those things, it's a halftime plan, and go forward. I almost feel like this staff in some ways is worse off the more time they're able to break stuff down, because there's more contingencies that are brought into play. So when they have only a halftime to continue to put this stuff together, then there's only a few things that they can basically do. And then because everything's limited like that, the players are free to come out and play aggressively and play free. You almost feel like really what they need to do is just have halftime all week, and then just come out and play like it was halftime at the beginning of the game. That's basically something that that approach of not overthinking things and not being so concerned about teams basically being able to trick you or come out and show you stuff that you're worried about, not getting overly concerned with the various contingencies, because it turns into the Princess Bride scene with, you know, Vizzini, where, you know, well, I obviously cannot drink the one that's in front of me, and but I can't drink the one that's in front of you either, because you would know that someone like me would not, you know, fall for that. So you have to avoid getting into that rat trap. And again, that's the funny thing. You know, Jimbo Fisher talks about, you know, quarterbacks rat trapping. I actually think that the Florida State staff, to some degree, because of the way that teams have been able to target Florida State, have been able to develop have been able to come in and run so many different things and focus on bringing new stuff against Florida State. I think that actually the Florida State staff has to some degree started rat trapping in worrying about all these various contingencies and the various things that could happen that this team could come in with and could do, rather than focusing on playing Florida State football. And I think that really needs to be the attention there is, you know, we're going to treat the week like halftime and we're going to be us. We're going to come out and we're going to play Florida State football. And, you know, if they are able to counterpunch us on this or that because they were able to out-prepare us on this or that, that's fine. We're still going to win because we prepared to do the things that we really do well. And I think that's really what they need. And you know, frankly, I was told this week that the staff was basically about as shell-shocked as anybody by, you know, what happened. By how unprepared everybody, you know, unprepared the team looked and how badly they played. And that, you know, this team from top down, all the way at the top, all the way to the bottom, is really in need of some confidence coming into this USF game. So what that's going to mean, especially combined with this being a Super Bowl basically for USF and all those players down there wanting, just needing to get a little bit of confidence, a little blood in the water, and they're going to play lights out. I think it's really, really important that Florida State come out and have a really good start, a really confident start against USF to continue to build confidence. And honestly, you know, if this team comes out and starts well, they could blow the doors off of USF, even though they're a good team. And we saw what they did in the second half against Ole Miss. But if they don't do that and they come out and still have a few busts and are playing uncertain, this is a really dangerous game. Florida State could easily be 2-2 after this game. Now, I will say that, you know, I was told Fisher made an effort, a real effort, to keep practice as upbeat, loose, as fun as possible, having guys, you know, making sure that staff and everybody else were, you know, were not taking things too seriously this week on a number of fronts, making sure that players understood that the season wasn't over and that, you know, that they were going to, that they needed to stay loose. It was a big point of emphasis this week. But really what they need to do is they need to come out simple, come out with the opening, both on defense and on offense, with the five or six things that your guys do best. Script that and run through it over and over and over again until they have some success, and then start to ride that success with that confidence into the game a little bit further on. I think that's really what you got to do. As for predictions in this game, Lord knows. I mean, this Florida State team could go either direction. I mean, they could get down by 14 against USF and then really start to rat trap because the confidence starts to go. And then, you know, when your confidence starts to go and you've been uncertain on different things, boy, you talk about really having trouble playing fast football and aggressive football. They could be in real trouble at that point, and they could, you know, lose by double digits, but they could also come in and blow the doors off this team. I'm going to split the difference. I'm going to say Florida State wins this game 34 to 27. I guess that would mean they narrowly cover. You know, that's just an outright guess. I really don't know what to expect this week. It's a game I'm looking forward to seeing exactly what happens and how they approach that, how much they've been able to simplify on both sides of the ball, particularly up front on offense and particularly in the secondary on defense. It'll be interesting to see what they're able to do. In any case, that'll wrap it for us today. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast. Before we get out of here, just a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. Make sure to catch the next podcast, in which we are going to cover the USF game and evaluate whatever happens in that game. Once again, I'm Doc Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. Thanks for listening.
I made this.